Okay, it's Dennis Darby again. Some of you probably heard me a moment ago. We had some issues with our recording system. Hopefully you can hear me now. We have lots to transmit today, lots of information. We've got over 500 companies on the line, company reps. And just so you know, we'll be back on the line again tomorrow at 1. It's our intention to hold these calls on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. through this whole crisis, so mark it in your calendars. Now, I will introduce our speakers momentarily, but I wanted to give you a quick update on things because things are moving very quickly. First of all, last night, CME and the members of our coalition sent a letter to the Prime Minister and to the Emergency COVID-19 Cabinet Committee. We urged the government to protect manufacturers, business, and in a number of ways, and its workers. As of this morning, you will have heard already. There was some movement, and we'll talk about that in a second. We've also asked, the government is asking CME to help identify and to protect manufacturers, businesses, and workers related to the whole area of the N95 masks, surgical gowns, gloves, face masks, and medical devices. There's really an important call out from the government for those manufacturers. If you make those items in your plants, please contact Matt Poirier. His email is in the invitation because we really want to make sure that we have those manufacturers are getting what they need and are connected to the right authorities, because we do know that these are some very critical items, and we hope that we can help facilitate making sure that everybody has access and has what they need in order to produce. So this morning, the Minister of Finance as well as the Prime Minister both made announcements about some of the changes. And here's what I'd like to say. Many of them, in fact, most of what we asked for in the last, in our COVID-19 policy ask, but also in our letter yesterday, were addressed in part today for industry. We heard this morning about payroll tax deductions. We heard about delay in tax filing and payments, delay in tax audits. Some direct financial support, which we've talked about in the past, from maybe additional stuff on top of what EDC and BDC talked yesterday, and support for workers in terms of emergency care benefits for people who are self-employed, quarantined, or do not qualify for EI, and some more spending related to work, if you have to care for people or if you have parents with children who require care supervision. There's an emergency support benefit of $5 billion to support workers who are not eligible for EI, deferrals on tax filings, and the government has assured us that there will be some commitment from our banking system to provide flexible solutions on a case-by-case basis for loans and mortgages that you may have in your business. There are a number of other details as well. You'll see a report from us. I think many of us could look at these and say, well, maybe they're not enough for my particular sector, but let me tell you at this point, we are very pleased that CME's recommendations have been listened to. We've been in constant contact on your behalf, and we're pleased to say that we're making progress. And as the Prime Minister said today, this is just a start. We want to make sure. So if your sector or your particular category wasn't addressed, or the size of your business wasn't addressed today, please make sure you connect with CME. You're either one of your principal contact, or Matt Poirier, or myself, because we will continue to work with the government to make sure that we have supports in place for businesses and workers. And so let me go to the beginning of today's call, which is really about helping make sure that you have the information that you need. You'll see that we have a COVID-19 resource page on the CME website. Please look at that. We keep updating it as new information emerges. We've committed to reach out to every one of our members by phone to see how they're doing, and we're making great progress there. And as Marie said at the beginning, we're recording these calls so you can access them later, share them with your others in your organizations. Now, let's talk about with our two speakers today, one talking about business planning and strategy and giving you some key legal advice, particularly insurance. So we have with us today Alan Mack, who's a partner, National Forensics Practice Leader from BDO, and we have Kevin Kuhn, a partner from Baker McKenzie. Gentlemen, welcome, and thank you for joining us today and giving us your time. We'll hear from them for about 15 minutes and then move to Q&A. For the Q&A, I remind everybody that we'd ask you to please email your questions to Matt Poirier, matt.poirier@cme.mec.ca. probably the most popular guy on at CME right now because he gets more emails than anybody. But seriously, we won't be opening the line today, and Matt will collect all the questions that you give and then read them out for our guests. So without any further ado, let me turn it over to Alan. You can begin. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much, and happy for this opportunity to speak to your members. One thing we noticed quickly and off the bat with this COVID situation is that it really left no sector of our economy untouched. Unlike some other crises that we faced in the past where they might be geographically or sectorally confined, this one has touched virtually all of us, and a big reason for that is the availability of labor, the impact on labor. So one thing that we're advising all our clients to do is to take a people-first approach to address this very human and very personal challenge. So the strategy is not just to address the concerns of staff, but also customers and the communities in which our businesses operate. In order to do that, we're advancing a framework built around adapting your business and, frankly, our business as well to this new reality of COVID. So the first prong of that is the people and workforce. It's no surprise that hopefully you've all done this by now, but to identify your mission-critical functions. And that would include ensuring a continuity of your leadership, your executive leadership, and understanding your minimum levels of staffing required to perform your functions. Part of that would include identifying redundancies, which you hopefully would have built in place. But if not, if there's an opportunity now to cross-train your staff, or perhaps even recalling staff, if you've got recently retired personnel or those who have been promoted, to bring them back to backfill functions as necessary. What we're seeing a lot of in our clients and we're helping them with is developing flexible and rotating schedules. Part of that will be just to risk manage, prepare rotating teams that you can keep one team safe or quarantined in case your facilities do become contaminated. But also we're helping our clients talk about rationalization. We have heard about plants being shut down. We, of course, are aware of medical officers of health advising and recommending closures of bars and restaurants. So we are working with our clients to talk about work share or furloughs and layoffs. With respect to crisis management, of course, this is all about communications. So first and foremost, it's important to have a clear leadership team that will have decision-making responsibility and authority to guide your company through this crisis. Once that's been established, the second key step is to have in place a clear information flow to ensure that this decision-making team will have the timely and correct information to guide the company. The third prong of that strategy would be to identify the key stakeholders of your organization and to understand their decision needs, and then to remain in contact with them so that you maintain their confidence. This is certainly something that's absolutely critical, especially with your employees facing sudden change. If we see in the news the last few days, companies or operations being shut down abruptly, that's a sudden change. People are being asked to work from home. They may not have been equipped to do so or may not have been trained to do so. We want to make sure that they do feel supported, they're not isolated, and that you're in regular contact with them to be part of the team. Moving on to risk management, we're advising our clients to identify all their critical supply and sales contracts. This is from a risk management perspective to make sure you understand who your key inputs, your key sales are, and to identify your cancellation terms if they exist, to identify alternate sources of supply if available, so you're prepared for that possibility of disruptions in the supply chain or distribution. As part of the business planning, we're strongly recommending that clients undertake a realistic forecasting exercise in the production capacity to understand where they can produce, where they have challenges in production, where they have challenges in supply, to understand where they might face shortfalls and constraints. And again, I emphasize the importance of having realistic assumptions in that. Dovetailing into that would be financial recovery. As part of the operational forecasting, a strong demand that we're hearing from our clients and our stakeholders is the importance of financial forecasting, cash flow modeling, and figuring out where those pain points might be coming up. The idea being that it's better to have those conversations with, for example, lenders or having lender management plans in place if indeed you are looking at those constraints. Going back a bit to the work at home and work from home and the change in the work environment, one thing that we are recommending is that companies take a good close look at IT capacity, including the ability of their networks to stay and work from home. I think a number of companies have realized challenges in that regard, but also cyber training. We are seeing an uptick in phishing scams just through emails. And if your employees are not trained properly in that regard, that's going to be a weakness that you'll have to monitor very closely. Looking forward, because at some point this challenge will end, we'll be advising clients to examine their business and look for opportunities for value creation or value recreation. Looking ahead to recovery, what will the future look like? What will those opportunities be? And for a more current view, I know that Kevin will be talking about business insurance. Business interruption insurance. That's also part of our practice at BDO. We are involved from a claims preparation perspective. I'll leave the coverage issues to Kevin, but one thing that we are hearing a lot about from brokers and our clients is the uncertainty of whether losses will be covered. So I wanted to point out that no matter the uncertainty that you may be facing, what we're recommending is that you do keep track of all the expenses and all the activities that you're undertaking now in response to COVID, because we're not sure what the future will bring. So I'll turn that time now to Kevin.
Yeah, Alan, thank you very much. And it's a good segue. What I'd like to do is just spend a couple of minutes to talk about business interruption insurance, segue that to pick up on a topic that Alan mentioned around looking at your key contracts and in particular the issue around force majeure clauses to the extent to which you'll be impacted. And then, of course, the other major question that that people have is around the employee issues and the impact from the employer's perspective. I don't plan on covering that. Our webpage has regular updates on the impact on employees and what employers' rights are. And, of course, that is a very fluid situation, changing essentially every day, including this morning with the announcement that the Prime Minister made that Dennis referred to, that had changes to EI, and then questions as to how you are going to manage those issues and mitigate sort of both the law, legal requirements, as well as dealing with your workforce. So let me first turn to then the business interruption insurance. And I spoke to a colleague of mine at one of the big insurance companies, and of course, this is a questions are pouring into the insurance companies on this. And unfortunately, on the business interruption insurance perspective, that is a very narrow category of insurance, and it is often found as a rider or a follow-on to property protection insurance. It has very limited application. And to Alan's point, insurance is a contractual relationship. So a starting point is to look at your insurance contract. But generally, while each carrier has different policies and they'll have nuanced differences between them, most business interruption insurance is a follow-on to the property loss coverage, and therefore it is generally contingent on or in relation to property damage, such as the trigger being physical damage to property, such as a fire, a flood, or similar type matter. Generally, issues like COVID or pandemic are not covered because they're not related to the covered peril of being a fire or flood or damage to physical property. Let me just quote you from one of the more common carriers' policy where it defines the business interruption insurance as business income loss due to impairment of operation caused directly by or related to the peril to property. And again, it's attached to the property itself. It would not include individuals who may have contracted the virus or susceptible to that, key person within your organization, goes down sick, your business interruption insurance generally would not cover those types of incidents. So it's very highly unlikely that COVID is going to be an acceptable level of claim. Now, everything can change, but those of you that have, and I apologize for any insurance companies or brokers that are on the line, but generally, those of you that have dealt with insurance claims know that insurance companies tend not to be expansive in their views as to accepting claims. And I suspect in this instance, a similar approach will be taken. We do not expect the insurance industry, unless prompted by federal and or provincial regulations, to do so, but that would be highly unlikely. So being a bearer of bad news here on this area of mitigation of some of the damages, I can tell you that to the extent to which you have questions, the industry is being deluged. Your brokers or those that you deal with on a general basis will be very cautious and reticent. They all are being instructed to refer questions of potential claims or real claims to the claims department, and those questions are being vetted by legal teams within the insurance companies. So my advice at this point would be, to the extent that you believe you may have a claim, or if you have questions, to direct those questions in writing, so you've got a record of them. And but at the same time, unless it falls within one of these categories, it's going to be very limited and would not put out a lot of hope in terms of COVID being covered by business interruption insurance. Let me turn now to other contractual entitlements, and in particular deal with this issue around force majeure. And again, most commercial contracts will have a force majeure clause in them. And generally what it is where you're defining circumstances beyond the party's control or their contemplation that renders the contract too difficult to perform or impossible to perform. And so the concept of force majeure is, let me just say that again, it's the circumstances beyond party's control or contemplation that renders the contract too difficult to perform or impossible to perform. And most commercial contracts will have this type of clause. And it's generally defined in terms of what those perils are. They typically include public health emergencies, communicable disease outbreaks, pandemics or epidemics, quarantines, government administrative action, failure of upstream suppliers. And so what you want to be doing immediately, if you have concerns about whether or not somebody that you're contracted with will be able to meet their obligations or whether or not you'll be able to meet your contractual obligations. And remember, this is a two-way thing, that you may want to be giving notice to somebody you're contracted with that you will have trouble complying or meeting the terms of the contract, or you may be on the receiving end of a notification from a supplier that their failure to be able to meet the obligations under the contract. And so you want to take a look at and understand what those provisions are in your various different commercial contracts. Important consideration here is, let me just pause here for a second. The effect of these force majeure clauses are potentially threefold. Generally, to defer the performance of the contract, defer it, suspend it as a second point, or cancel it altogether. Generally, it's suspension, but there are circumstances where it could be used to nullify provision under the contract or the contract itself. Important consideration will be in terms of notification under the contract. Many force majeure provisions will have notification requirements to the other party in terms of setting out notification and timing. And timing will be critical. And then also under these clauses, often you see obligations with regards to mitigating mitigating the potential damages or the impact by remedying the cause of the reliance on it. And the standard often used is good faith, due diligence, and reasonable dispatch. So just to summarize on the force majeure before I finalize my comments would be look at the notification requirements in anticipation of giving notification or receiving it, and then the cause of it, and then thirdly, keeping records as to the nature of the loss and the impact on the loss. And then finally, sort of related to force majeure, it's also the concept in law as to the frustration of contract. And that really refers to the inability by circumstances that the radically transforms the circumstances that are governing the performance of the contract. And that concept exists in law. It is less clearly defined, but does exist. And frustration is probably a stricter test because it will not deal with issues around whether or not the contract is simply more onerous, more expensive, less profitable, or less beneficial to fulfill. It's a question of whether or not it is generally whether or not the circumstances are such that it cannot be performed or impossible to perform. And so as with the force majeure clause, you want to review the contract. You want to see whether or not there are other specific notice requirements about performance around it to meet those so that you don't run afoul of those provisions. And that, and then can the contract be performed? You want to collect and maintain information in relation to it. And then who's impacted and why it cannot be performed. And then the impact, on suppliers and or your workforce, and then any mitigation efforts. And with that, I think I'll stop my comments and take any additional questions that we may have. So with thanks, Dennis, and I'll turn it back to you. Or,
Thank you very much. Thank you both. And again, we're going to post this on the website. I guess the key thing is let's see what we've got in terms of questions. Matt, if you're on the line, what do we have in terms of questions? And maybe spend the rest of the time on those if we can.
Sure. Thanks, Dennis. So the first one sort of relates to WorkShare and that program that's offered and has been expanded by the government to deal with COVID. And the question is pretty practical, is how do you go about signing up for it, what's involved, and what do I need to show? I don't know if that would be a good question for you to stick handle.
Well, I'm in the forensic practice, and I deal with things of that nature. Maybe it's best if you want to forward that question to me, and I can pass it on to our human resource senior advisory leader, so we can address that.
Certainly. Let me take a quick stab at that on the employment side. I have not reviewed the specific changes that were implemented this morning. However, most of these applications are online. They'll spell out specifically the criteria needed. The other reality with all of these employment issues at the moment and the current rules and others is that a fair bit of latitude is going to be granted with regards to the rationale and otherwise in terms of these applications, because the underlying purpose is to try and mitigate the impact on employees and employers. And so it'll be on, the forms will be online. I just simply get to the forms, look at them, and it should be generally user-friendly. If not, consult somebody like Alan or your other employment law counsel. And then the other important aspect of that is if you're going to do work share in some fashion, have a discussion with your employees as a starting point to see if there's acceptability around it and how that is it a practical solution for your particular workplace. Because if you've got a workplace where everybody is concerned about the potential exposure issues, then you're going to need to deal with those concerns that people have, and you want to try and get an agreement as to how WorkShare is going to unfold.
Okay, great. Back over to you, Matt.
Yep, we have a question on cash flow. Until the government announces any major help, what are some good cash flow strategies that businesses should be thinking about?
Well, that gets to the nuts and bolts of things. And so one thing, again, going back to the forecasting, understanding the timing of cash flows, I think we're down to weeks, if not days, of forecasting inflows and outflows. But staying ahead of things and being proactive, you should definitely reach out to lenders if you have to maintain that relationship, give them a heads up. If you put more credit in place, that'd be very helpful. Otherwise, it's really pragmatic going to your vendors and asking for extended terms, asking for discounts or release, which is what we're seeing already in with our clients with major payables outstanding. They're going back and saying, hey, we need X relief and help us out.
Okay.
Excellent. And sort of the last question, I've summarized a whole bunch of questions into one. But basically, will there be more payroll support than was announced this morning by the government? For a lot of companies, it's a drop in the bucket. The answer to that is yes, and we hope there will be more that's on the way. Like Dennis mentioned in his opening remarks, what the government announced today is a phased-in plan. The government also has the strategy of keeping their powder dry in the event that this crisis goes on for longer than a few weeks, right? If we go into months, they need to have tools left in the toolbox to be able to combat this. So it is our understanding that there will be more announcements made, but as of right now, that's what we have. So, Dennis, that was it for questions. Back to you.
Well, first of all, thank you, thank you to both of our speakers. Clearly, if you have questions, like I said, if you haven't done it already, send them to Matt Poye. He will attempt to make sure they get addressed. We're on again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We have Aaron Coos from Sherrard Coos to talk about all things EI and David Garson about immigration considerations and temporary foreign workers, because that is a question that's come up over and again by our members. We will continue to update. Please watch our website, COVID-19 page, but also look for emails from us as we continue to work with governments at both the federal and provincial levels. One of the things I do want to emphasize is the announcement today that were announced federally. We are working with our divisional VPs across the country to work with their government people to see where we can get parallel considerations. And Quebec has done some, made some already, which is great, but we need to make sure that every government is doing what it can to help keep cash in the hands of manufacturers. So with that, I will say thank you for attending today, and I will see you tomorrow, so to speak. Bye for now.